Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello, I'm Tom Gilson, and today I'm pleased to bring you more interview material from the Center for Science and Culture's annual summer seminar in Seattle, Washington. This episode is a double feature with former summer seminar student Beatrice Rusu interviewing biologist Jonathan Wells and computer scientist Winston Newart. We begin by jumping into the conversation with Dr. Wells.
Dr. Wells, what was the lecture that you spoke on today, and if you can give us a summary of that?
Today at the summer seminar, I gave a lecture on ontogenetic information. Ontogeny simply means the development of an embryo from its beginning to an adult. Information I define very broadly as whatever imparts form, whatever specifies form, in form. So ontogenetic information is whatever specifies the forms of an organism as it develops from an embryo to an adult. I basically made 5 points, see if I can remember them. First, DNA, although it contains complex specified information that warrants an inference to design, does not contain all the information needed for the development of an organism. Second, all cells, or most cells at least, contain patterns in their membranes and elsewhere that pre-exist before the DNA is transcribed into RNA. And those patterns help direct where those RNAs end up, which is crucially important for the life of the cell, and especially for the embryo. Third, I pointed out that the patterns I just mentioned have to change during embryo development. The patterns in the fertilized egg are not the same as the patterns that we find later on in development. So the basic question I addressed in my lecture was, where is the information that specifies these patterns? I concluded that the information has to be added in the course of embryo development. I don't know the nature of it, the information, but it's not all there in the fertilized egg. So finally, I concluded that the laws of mechanistic physics are insufficient to account for living things. There's something more going on in living things than ordinary modern physics envisions.
So do you have any idea what it could be? Do you want to make any comment on that?
Well, as I said, I don't know the nature of the information. I know that it's something specifying form, and it's not in the DNA, not all in the DNA, and not in the original fertilized egg. So some kind of information, whatever it is, has to be added as the embryo develops to change its form into these new forms we see later on in development.
Thank you. Dr. Wells, what research or what type of work are you currently doing?
Well, I did a lot of research in developmental biology to lead me to the conclusions I just mentioned. I also published a book 2 years ago, Zombie Science, pointing out that biology textbooks still contain the same icons of evolution that they contained in 2000. All of which, in some way or another, misrepresent the truth. In fact, there are more icons than I was able to mention in 2000, so I described them too. Since then, I've been helping to edit other people's books. Very happy to do that. They're important books, and I can do it from home, which is very nice. I also just finished a chapter on the Miller-Urey experiment, which was one of the 10 icons of evolution I described in 2000. And which is still with us in the textbook, still misrepresenting the evidence. And a few days from now, I will turn to editing another book.
Great. I just wanted to ask about your experience at the summer seminar as far as the type of questions that you see, and what does it mean for you to be here at the summer seminar with the students that we have?
I find teaching very invigorating, especially with students such as these who are from diverse backgrounds, many nationalities, scientists, philosophers, theologians, teachers. So the questions I get from them are actually quite challenging. They're all over the map, and I'm happy to address them, although today, as often happens, I had to answer, I think, 2 questions with, I don't know.
All right. Also, what would you tell someone like a young person that's currently in the university as far as in the pursuit of truth and potentially kind of furthering the work that current biologists as yourself or others are trying to find answers to the big questions about origins and about evolution and so on?
Well, as I said in my lecture today, this is actually a very exciting time for young scientists, because the more we learn, the more we realize we don't know. So there's an awful lot out there for people to discover. And young scientists, it seems to me, are perfectly poised to contribute to those discoveries. On the other hand, they have to be careful, because there's a dogmatic materialism in control of most of our universities and research centers, which excludes the idea of design, among other things. And so if they see design in living things, they may have to be very careful in how they conduct themselves until they finish their schooling and research.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Wells. Just wanted to get a brief understanding of what you have been talking about this week, and look forward to hear more from you in other lectures. Thank you.
That was biologist and Icons of Evolution author Jonathan Wells. Russo also caught up with computer scientist Winston Ewart to discuss his groundbreaking work on the dependency graph of life. Here is their conversation.
I am here with Dr. Winston Ewart that presented at the summer seminar, and I wanted to ask you, Dr. Ewart, what was your lecture about?
I presented on the dependency graph of life, which is a paper I published a little less than a year ago, presenting an alternative hypothesis for why life would seem to exhibit a nested hierarchy pattern besides the standard explanation of common descent.
Could you give us some of your top highlights of the presentation that you think would give that evidence for what you just said?
So, yeah, the top highlights of my talk. Well, really, I just explain what is the nested hierarchy and how life forms of different sorts seem to naturally fit into a nested hierarchy classification, and how that is explained under the standard evolutionary model. And then we look at, well, how can we try and explain the same thing from the perspective of intelligent design? And I go through different ways people have done that. They can either accept common descent and sort of integrate that with intelligent design, or a variety of other explanations. And I explain that, in my assessment, none of the current explanations have really done the job correctly. So then I explain my model. And my model basically says that life forms would be designed in a similar way to the way we design computer software. And in particular, with computer software, we reuse what we call modules between different software programs. And my theory is that the homology we see in living things is due to these shared modules, which are showing up in different species. And in particular, the modules are not completely independent. They have what we call a dependency relation between different modules, where one module depends on another. And my theory is that the nested character that we see in the hierarchy is actually a consequence of a dependency relation, where one thing depends on another. Whereas in the standard common descent theory, this is because one ancestral species descended from another ancestral species. But in my model, it's because one module depends on another module. And I did some initial work testing that model to try and see how well does it fit against biological data from a number of gene databases in terms of classification of gene families in different species. And I'm able to show mathematically that actually it fits better to my dependency graph model than it does to a standard tree model.
So tell me more about your dependency model that you created. I am also coming from a software engineering background, and so I can ask you about, did you use inheritance? Did you use, I'm sure you use some of the object-orienting models, but could you kind of go a little bit more in depth of what exactly did you use? Because it sounds like you haven't per se maybe used trees or binary trees, but you use another more like a distributed dependency model. Correct me if I'm wrong here.
Well, so the idea comes from, in sort of your modern software engineering case, you create your project and you typically list a bunch of things that you import of third-party projects that you're going into those. And each of those may in turn import other projects that you need to it. And so sometimes we call them packages or modules or these sorts of things. So it's not really in the object-oriented inheritance side. That's sort of at a within the code level. This is more in terms of which blocks of code you're pulling in at the higher level into your system.
Okay, so it sounds like you are talking more about taking it one level higher. We're not talking about specifically at the code level and design in the actual program itself and the relationship between the objects inside of the program, but you're talking about how different pieces of code interact with each other and how they depend on each other.
Yeah, that's correct. And part of the reason I wanted to do that is just because, I mean, object-oriented programming is one paradigm, but there's other paradigms like functional programming or generic programming and all these different paradigms. But you'll find no matter what paradigm you go to, they all are operating on this dependency graph model. So it's kind of general to across different sorts of paradigms. And I think that's an important part of what's going on.
And when you were mentioning data that you compared your model against, could you talk more about what type of biological data have you compared this against?
Yeah. So there are a number of different gene databases that they collect genes and information about genes. One of the things any of these databases will do is they will group the genes into families because different organisms will have genes that are similar. They're not, you know, piece for piece identical, but they figure they're similar enough. They classify them in the same gene family. And so sort of one way that you would expect to see the pattern of life is which genes are present in which species. And so we'd expect that to kind of fit a tree pattern on common descent, that, you know, a gene showed up at one particular point in the tree of life and it's inherited by a bunch of descendants of that. And it shouldn't go showing up other places in the tree of life. So that's the sort of data that I was looking at. And so I looked at 9 different gene databases to get an idea of no matter how you decide to classify your gene families, I get a similar result.
So is this the current type of research project you're working on, or are there other projects that you're working on?
I am currently working on trying to extend this further and such. In the first paper I came out with, I necessarily had to be somewhat limited and I couldn't do everything I wanted to do and couldn't shore up every possible objection you might throw against it. So I'm working to continue on furthering the model so that hopefully I'll come up with a future update which will address some of the limitations in the original paper.
So you already have published the paper about this, or you're also currently working to publish one upcoming with the new results?
So the original paper was published a little less than a year ago. And I'm currently ongoing sort of research, but I don't have anything near a paper in a publishable state right now.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
That was Baylor University computer scientist Winston Ewart discussing his latest research. You can find his research paper on the subject by simply Googling, quote, the dependency graph of life, unquote. And for the latest from Jonathan Wells, check out iconsofevolution.com, where you can find short videos, more interviews with Dr. Wells, and information about his latest book, Zombie Science, More Icons of Evolution. This has been ID the Future. Thank you for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.